and welcome to the All Japan Women's Destiny podcast. I'm your host, JD. Welcome to another episode as we go through the history of All Japan Women's Professional Wrestling through the classics episodes that you can find on various places of the internet. I vastly encourage to follow along and learn and enjoy the history of this just awesome women's wrestling promotion of the past. This is a spin-off in conjunction with the Red Leaf Retrocast. That is the proper episode where these come from. We hope you enjoy our audio and our discussions over the various wrestlers and the matches in which you go through the ages. If you like what you hear and you want more content, please consider checking out the Patreon. That is patreon.com/redleafretrocast, all one word, where we also cover LLPW, various other women's wrestling promotions of the past, and the project that the whole reason it exists is the Joshi 2010s journey, where we go through coming out of the dark ages of Joshi professional wrestling and really learning and having fun with wrestlers that we're very familiar with to this day to ones that we may have missed out on. I hope you enjoy the audio you're about to hear covering AJW. And if you want more, please, again, consider signing up to the Patreon and leaving us reviews over at iTunes, Spotify, and the like, all your favorite podcasting outlets in which you listen to AJW and the Red Leaf Retrocast. Enjoy. And it's All Japan Women Destiny time. It's episode 69. Zenjo is a Dream Ignition. It is February 28th, 1993, from Corken Hall, an attendance of 1,969, which is very strange, let's be honest. This is at a time when they are not hesitating to put to claim like 2,300 people are at Corken Hall. You know, we're going shoulder to shoulder, but they got awfully specific with this one at 1969. But yes, we're on the road to Dream Slam, which took place. It was a double shot in April 1993, a massive interpromotional show that over on my LLPW reviews, I tried to stay away at that particular time. For LLPW, they were having, like, Suzuki Manami comes in and does a tag match in the main event. And what I tried to see was, in the vacuum of LLPW, as an LLPW fan, and I'm not watching AJW. I can't, like, let's just hypothetically throw it out there. I'm not going to those shows. I can't afford those shows, but I can afford LLPW shows or what have you. Because we're gearing up to the big famous Akira Hokuto Kandori match, which got critical acclaim, and it really, like, changed the game for LLPW. In AJW, they just want to run the biggest arenas they can and put on the biggest shows they can. And one thing we're going to get into on this particular episode is a depleting roster, if you will, or at least depleting spots, and they need to fill them. Well, we'll get into how they fill them and why. So, Masami Watanabe, whom will be known as Chaparita Asari, versus Saki Hasegawa is an exhibition match. It goes to like a 5-minute draw. Young Asari here, right now named Masami Watanabe, debuted November 19th, 1992. So we're only a few months into her career. She's 5 feet tall, which is notable because around this time, AJW drops the retirement rule, particularly for Bull Nakano. And they've also dropped the recruitment height requirement rule as well, hence why Asari is here. And she's incredibly athletic, and the more she develops and stops getting the shit kicked out of her by Saki Hasegawa on this day, she is going to blow people's minds with her essential gymnastics, with spinning star presses and the like coming into the ring. The giant Saki Hasegawa here is bullying a child for like 5 minutes. Hard kicks and slaps. A hazing, really, if you will. I did get a kick out of Rookie Asari wearing a red and black maple leaf repping that Team Canada for whatever reason might be. So, something to pay attention to, for sure. And we got another one, not an exhibition, but a rookie match nonetheless. It's Chikako Hasegawa, later known as Shiratori, against Tomoko Watanabe. And again, this is like that next level up from an exhibition. Tomoko bullies Chikako for a while, hitting and kicking the person below her status, if you will. And to be fair, Chikako got enough offense in for some fiery comebacks, but would easily be thwarted by various kicks. So mostly one side of affair here. Tomoko kicks her out of midair from a crossbody, then does a crossbody herself, boots her in the face, and finishes her off with a cradle, one-legged German suplex with a bridge situation. Is Tomoko on her way up? Or is she going to hang in this spot for a while? I'm leaning towards she's going to be on her way up a little bit as we get further. So our first official match on this card is Suzuka Minami and Etsuko Mita versus fellow LCO stablemate Mima Shimoda teaming with Sami Numata. Recognize that name? Well, you shouldn't, because she has barely been on any shows since she debuted in 1990. Okay, so again, she's got a little seniority over the people that we were just introduced in the prior matches. But the more notable topic is now we have this next gen, or the generation from the early 90s, debuting and starting to make their marks on the card. Numata is the case here. Shiratori and Asari, the cases before that. I bring this up now because we've got three very notable injuries that have effectively ended their careers currently. So spots are open. And if you listen to the last podcast where I jumped around between February, or that particular episode jumps around between February and March for certain shows, Debbie Malenko has just suffered a career-ending ankle injury. Just last summer, Bison Kimura is now out via a shoulder injury with neck issues and nerve damage. So she'll be out for a couple of years. And what's her name? I can't remember, but she went out with a neck, essentially a broken neck. So she'll be out for like 18 months minimum. So we have three big open spots on the card. Just there alone, with an already kind of small feeling roster, we're starting to see what I saw in LLPW, where those wrestlers can only wrestle each other so many times before it gets stale. And AJW combats this with, they still want to put on the best cards possible, so that's where they get the JWP and LLPW and FMW people to come in to freshen up the card. Very kind of relevant to today's stardom with bringing in various freelancers and freelance groups and working with other promotions every once in a while to, instead of, like, there's only so many times on big shows you can do DDM versus Cosmic Angels, for example. So bring in a Marvelous faction to freshen up. While house shows, you can do that more often because people know it's a house show. When you're at bigger events, you got to do bigger things and maintain interest. So that's what AJW is doing right now, right here, with particularly JWP, because they got the more notable name. They've been around a little bit longer than LLPW, for obvious reasons. But so how does Numata hold up here? Well, unfortunately, she's easily four steps below the other three in this match. The LCO duo on the opposite side. Mita and Shimoda have just leveled up at this point. Okay. Just them starting off against each other had heat and good fire to them. Suzuka Minami, just like in my LLPW reviews around this time of year, has really found her place and flourished as this pseudo tag specialist. So combine that with her veteran status, this is a real good spot for her that she has mixed into. She's not someone you're going to push into the upper card, but she can do damn well in spots like this in various tag matches. Or she has enough of like a past cred where you can throw her into a title match situation. I mean, not that they do that with the type of booking that was the 90s during this time for AJW, but regardless, you could have done that. So Numata mostly just stays out of the way, and that leads to a lot of Mima Shimoda specifically just looking fantastic in the ring against her stablemates. Drop kicks, suplexes, you name it, she was on it. While Mita, I have said this before, has firmly settled into where Bison Kimura was, both in style and look, she's not as high on the card yet, but the role is being filled nicely. Overall, a good match that ends with Suzuka Minami hitting a German and pins Mima. Kind of shocking considering Numata was right there, actually. I'm going to blow your guys' minds with this next match. AJW title, kind of their lower end title. Debbie Malenko versus Terry Power. Okay. You aren't going to believe me. This is like a Big Dave 3.5-star match. These two went out and did an American-style match to a Japanese crowd, so they didn't really react to it all that much. But from just a technical standpoint and execution, the impossible was made. Terry Power had a good match. Praise be! We can't believe it. And a singles match at that, Terry Power had. Terry had the power early. Shoulder blocks, does a wicked spill to the outside, doing a lariat over the top and falling over with Malenko. She does the Steiner pose, kisses the bicep, runs at Malenko, who's leaning against the post, and you guessed it, Malenko moves and she lariats the post. Oh, her beautiful arm, the muscle destroyed. She holds this thing, she sells it for the entire match, and it's just Debbie working the arm there, that style she's basically perfected at this point for herself since that Akira Hokuto bout. And Terry sells it well enough anyways, and fights back using one arm the whole match. She's doing all her power moves with like one arm. She's trying to lariat with the other, while Debbie just simply uses her speed and attacks the arm. She eventually counters a power slam into a crossface chicken wing to submit Terry Powers. And holy shit, I don't believe my eyes if I say so myself. Crazy. This is your modern, this is your Mendoza line for women's matches now. If I can say you had a better match than Debbie Malenko versus Terry Power, you have succeeded. There you go. There's your Western women's Mendoza line. I'm calling it the Malenko Power line. Yes, definitely going with that. It rings well. Bat Yoshinaga and Kyoko Inoue have a horrible match against Aja Kong and Kaori Ito. It did have its moments. And by that, I mean when Aja Kong came in and backfisted some bitches. But any time momentum shifted and or was remotely interesting came when the Uracan would slam down on them. But man, bad. Ito, she can literally only do a double stomp with her legs as straight as possible. She's shooting into ribs, baby. She wants baby back ribs, but not the right kind. And Kyoko, okay, there's good stuff here, but it was a short period. She did go toe-to-toe with Kong and ultimately just got owned. Ugh. I feel gross reviewing it. Anyways, main evento. 3WA tag title match, 2 out of 3 falls. It's Manami Toyota and Toshio Yamada. Pretty much carrying the main event these days. It really feels like that. They're taking on Takako Inoue and Yumika Hota. This sucker went 32 minutes. It's absolutely a prelude match to Dream Slam in Osaka, where Takako is essentially going to be Mayumi Ozaki, and Hota is in the kind of Dynamite Kansai spot. you kind of you get aesthetically and stylistically like what they're going for. But to be fair, Hota's just in a weird place in this promotion. She's bouncing around singles matches where she loses. She's going through different tag partners. I really get the feeling they just don't know what to do to this woman. They don't want to push her in the main event, but they don't want to like outright bury her either, because she comes from that same like class Hokuto did at the very least. But anyways, starts off with Takako jumping Toyota. So par for the course with Takako in a way these days. She's getting a little mean streak. But Takako bounces all over the ring while Hota does her no-selling act, which is really funny because after this no-selling, she gets kicked like square in the face. Really funny. I got like Johnny Cage in Mortal Kombat vibes where he like takes his glasses off. He's like, no, sell that, bitch. And from there, the next 5 minutes were ball-to-wall counters. Partner coming in and out for a shot and counter of a doomsday device was cool. A botch of a super powerbomb spot by Hota and Takako. Really, as expected, they're going to botch that. They do this like tombstone setup and then like upside down hand off the wrestler in the upside position to the person sitting on the top. The grip's never right. They always have to drop them like slow, or they just dump them on their neck. It's very bad. They haven't figured out the whole cradle the leg and throw them on like starting in a backdrop position. They're like suplexing them into them. It's very weird. But regardless, it's finisher spam time from Hota, i.e. Tiger Drivers, cross arm sit out powerbomb to pin Yamada is your first fall. Pretty good. Pretty good start. Fall two. I mean, I like this. After a break, Yamada and Takako square up for essentially a K1 match. Yamada nails her with a left hook for the advantage. Just very funny. It's like, oh, okay, Takako, you want to square up? Well, bam, get you with the left hook. The hurricane came your way and she goes down. And ultimately the second fall, at first it was fun and then it just gets botchy. And then it's fun again, and then it's botchy again. It never could, like, find its stride for the second fall. And Takako and Hota take in a camel clutch set piece for Hota to just kick Toyota square in the chest. They really milk it to the crowd. Lots of tag team flubs from Toyota and Yamada, as in, you know, someone ducks out of the way, and Toyota will crash into Yamada, just constantly hitting her own teammate by accident, losing strike bouts with Hota. So the story of this second fall was all about their miscommunication, and you really felt like they were just going to drop two straight falls with the way this was going. Toyota even slips on her second top rope drop kick as she goes at it, but ultimately the champs fight back briefly, hit Yamada's flying enziguri. Minami does an assisted moonsault in which she overshoots her opponent. And then she finally gets a Japanese Ocean suplex to pin Takako. This second fall was an utter mess. If you would have flipped the two results where, because of their miscommunication, that led to Toyota and Yamada losing the first fall, and then Hota can get kind of rolled up in fall two or something, it definitely would have been better. This second fall, just to me, was kind of a disaster, even though they managed to do some cool shit in there. Now, the third fall, save the match. Dropkick spamming by Toyota. Scores off with Takako more. Brawls a bit to the outside. They're just throwing into chairs. Kick spamming and Suguri spamming by Yamada on Hota. And this is where the sweat from the swimsuit that's underneath Yamada's kind of outside gear here. It's just the perfect sweat outline where you could completely see her swimsuit. It's pretty funny. I was thinking, man, is that butt sweat? Oh, Yamada, come on, girl, what are you doing? And then, like, the more she sweat, the more it was revealed that it was her swimsuit coming through. That's kind of funny. But Takako was throwing stiff lariats up top and down, defensive Toyota here into a... she gets... when Toyota goes down from these lariats, Yamada... Or I'm sorry. Takako, in a way, just lays in this really sick-looking knee bar. It's just full leg, goes back, she twists and turns and goes down. Excellent stuff. I really like that. Toyota's back up. Big German near fall. Double team moves for Team Cold Gold combo here. Neither on their best game at this point, really. But this is Takako's big night. She's playing everyone. She's hitting key moves. She's even getting a little chippy. Even did a sick dive accidentally taking out Hota. And Toyota, of course, follows that up at almost falling off the ropes and going diagonal knees face first into Takako on her moonsault. Toyota's a menace. Yamada high kicks Takako out of her way, and Toyota follows up with taking Takako kind of out of the equation, and Yamada finishes off Hota with the most perfect gory special you will ever see. It is amazing the way she was able to pull this off so seamless and flawlessly. This third fall was excellent, despite the missed moonsault situation. Great to watch. Champs retain. And I believe from here, the next three classic episodes will be scattered bouts from Dream Slam 1 and 2. I'm very excited for that show. I thought this was a good little primer leading into it. It got me to at least think in context of the state of AJW and why they're going into all of these cross-promotional shows. And it's exciting because now we're going to talk about like the booking of other promotions and their star players and how they come into AJW. Just like how currently in my LLPW reviews on the Patreon, at patreon.com/RedleafRetrocast, that $5 tier, that Chigusa Nagayo Jaguar Yokota tier, how LLPW and why they want to bring AJW wrestlers into their promotion and how they're booked accordingly within LLPW. We will now be going into AJW and how they book the competition. Because unlike LLPW, AJW has the advantage. And because of that, they have the pull. They have the rank above these other promotions. I'm very excited to cover that in time over these next few shows. And we're going to talk about some legendary matchups. And I've only seen, I think, three matches from both these Dream Slams combined. So I'm going to be watching these matches for the first time with you guys with a lot more knowledge of the promotion and the wrestlers involved. And I look forward to more.